You are listening to Ron Van Dam, a man who sold his soul for fame and fortune and didn't keep the receipt. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Quick, tell me what day of the week this is. See, you don't know. You have no idea. Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one in the middle. I'm Ron Van Dam. Thanks for being here. Have a nice weekend. Wait a minute. I haven't done the show yet. Before we start the show, could you do me a favor? Could you, like, cross your legs or something? Yeah. That's disgusting when you spread them like that. I don't want to see that. If one more person uses the excuse, I haven't had my coffee yet, someone's going to get hurt. I'm sick of hearing that. I mean, it's like you could murder somebody in cold blood and the cops show up and say, you're under arrest. What the hell are you doing? I'm sorry, I didn't have my coffee yet. Oh, okay, I didn't know that. If handcuffs are used in sex acts, you know, as being, like, sexy, like, you know, like, I'm going to handcuff you to the bed, then why is it like when you're arrested, you complain about it? You would think when you're arrested and the cop says, put your hands behind your back and puts handcuffs on, you should be going, oh, yes, yes, oh, yes. Welcome to the program. Make yourself comfortable. This could take a while. I'm the only talk show where not only do I entertain you for a period of time, but I also do your nails, because I've noticed nobody's like doing their nails now. You know what I'm saying? You know, what are women doing? Women must be going nuts. They can't get their nails done. That's such a fantasy for my, you know, I'm going to go spa day. I'm going to get my nails done. What? How is that? Getting your nails done is like relaxing. That's a spa thing, as you inhale formaldehyde. I don't get it. Wow. It's the only profession where the workers wear masks all the time. I don't understand. Everybody's roots are showing. Have you noticed that? Oh, yeah. Everybody's got gray hair. I'm seeing infants walking around with gray hair now. It's true. Everybody's got gray hair roots, and it's, I don't know. I don't know how you're doing it, man. I don't know. Anyway, welcome to, I'm entertaining myself, so just excuse me, okay? I mean, we all have our, leave me alone. I've got a great show for you today. That I do have. Writer, comedian, all around nice guy, John Shanahan, joins me today. He's the voice that you hear at the beginning of the program. He does the comedy commercials, the introductions. We call them bumps. I don't know what you call them. I know. To you, bumps are things that appear on your arm and you get concerned and you call the doctor. I understand that. We all have different terminology. So he joins us today. It's a popular segment, very, very popular in the Far East. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to go drinking with Mr. Shanahan.
And now we're drinking with Mr. Shanahan, drinking on the phone, drinking with Mr. Shanahan, so he don't have to drink alone again.
And we're drinking with Mr. Shanahan. Here he is. How are you doing there, Johnny?
I'm drinking, Ron.
With Mr. Shanahan?
I always am in that regard, so yes.
Okay. I'm going to tell you something to start this off, and I said it last time. I'm going to say it again, and it's
been. Oh, you drank early, didn't you?
No, it's not that. Well, yes, but it's not that. that damn song is still riding me.
Drinking with Mr. Shanahan, drinking on the phone.
Don't do that. Yeah, don't baby. Do that. Do you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to pee?
Wow, way to segue. that was like a U-turn in the middle of the freeway. I don't want to go to Encinitas. I'm going back to L.A. Not often.
Okay.
Is this? Do you have a celebrity who can come on and tell you what's wrong with you?
I'm sure I can find one.
I think Bill Engvall have this
yes,
problem?
Yes, he did. Yes, he's got every problem, apparently, for money. No, because I sometimes get up at 3 a.m. to do that, and when I do, your jingle comes through my head.
Thank you. As long as my jingle don't come through your jingle, I'm all good.
That did sound wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's a problem. It's like the Baby Shark song. It's driving me nuts.
I probably did like 3 takes of that, just sitting here, yeah. Like in my quote unquote office. You know, it's the spare room. actually, if you could see this place, it's a friggin' atrocity. It had been my son's bedroom when he was coming to stay with us more often. He lived separate from us, and now it's just overtaken with an array of laundry baskets in various states of fullness, and none of them were put there by me. If you know what I'm saying,
I get it. Yeah, and.
So there I was in this fabulously appointed studio, bang, where I do all of your bumps and things, and I was just like a dipshit sitting here singing this stupid ass jingle to myself, like 3 or 4 times. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm going to get him to put some music on it.
Well, I understand that, but did it did it feed into your brain like it has mine?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. Okay.
Oh, no doubt.
That's all I wanted to hear. That's all I wanted to hear.
Yeah, actually, knowing that we were going to, record some today, since we agreed that we would do this, it's been in the background,
good.
Like standing there like John Cusack with a boombox over his head playing an annoying jingle.
Yeah, because when I sit down with the psychiatrist, I want to be able to say, but I'm not the only crazy one.
He sings it too.
He does it. It can't just be me. So how you doing? What's going on there? What are you drinking?
Today, I have gone back to wine. You were very surprised last time that I was having a lovely craft beer.
Yep,
from Area. I have a big lusty red wine with me here today. This is a Washington State Syrah. You may also call it Shiraz if you like.
I probably would.
This is kind of cool. It's a wine called Lenore. Mm. And the winery, it's a small boutique winery, I guess, out of Washington called Corviday. Mm. And I tell you that because Corviday is the scientific name for like the family of like crows and ravens.
Oh, did not know.
And so what they've done is all of their wines are named after Edgar Allan Poe pieces.
Oh, that's bizarre.
So like Lenore, which I am drinking, is a poem by Edgar Allan Poe, and it's gorgeous. I this is one of these ones I bought it kind of on a whim. I had gone out wine shopping, which is what other people call therapy, but I go wine shopping, and I bought one just hey look there it is it's under $20 must be okay, and I went home and I opened it and I drank it and. The next day, I went back and bought 3 more.
Oh, so you enjoyed?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very velvety.
Nice.
It's very smooth. It's nice. Got like big, a little bit of licorice. You get some dark cherry flavors in there.
Ooh.
Nice dark fruit. I think you would dig this, actually, if at any point we're allowed to see people in person ever again.
No, never.
I may have to save one of these to bring to your abode or when you come here to the marsh.
Yeah, oh, I'd love to see the marsh.
Marsh is beautiful.
Yeah, I assume it is. I have a Woodbridge in front of me today, which is from California. It's a Pinot Noir.
A Pinot Noir.
And I was quite surprised last week that you were sporting the craft beer thing. And I don't know if you listened beyond the show last week when
I
were
did.
On.
You had Jim Cook on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Who I called Jim Koch by mistake, and he readily told me before the interview, that's not how you pronounce my last name. I said, well, then spell it differently. God, expect me to think.
What's a boy to do?
Really? Come on, man. Give me a clue at least.
Sorry, Jim Cock. Is that better?
Oh, that was my high school nickname.
Jim Cock?
Yeah, and Jim. That's what they called me. Anyway, good for me. Yeah, so how are you faring with all this thing? You're a work at home guy.
I am a work at home guy. Yeah, no, it's been great. It is a little. It's funny how you know the things that you realize that you miss.
Yes.
You know, obviously, I mean, the being able to work from home is kind of a luxury.
Yeah,
it's very
not
nice.
Bad, not bad.
But when like you realize that you miss like a certain sandwich at the office cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's just something that they make, like there's that one thing. And for me, although I could very well make this at home.
Yeah.
But it's very simple. Chicken salad sandwich with pepper jack cheese, chipotle mayo.
There you go.
Roasted red peppers.
Watch out. Watch out.
I haven't had one of those in a long time.
Yeah, but you could. But it's not the same if it doesn't come from the place. I get that.
We have, obviously there are cafeteria workers who are wonderful. There's this one woman who, if she's working that day, you always get a sandwich. We call her Heavy Hands. Because you will come away with a sandwich whose gross tonnage is not unlike that of a battleship. They don't charge you any extra because Heavy Hands has been you know going at it with the ladle.
God love
you
it.
Know a couple extra big old scoops. It's like she wants to test the tensile strength of bread.
Oh, love her.
Like let's see how much this sucker can hold. More tuna.
Wow.
So when Heavy Hands is working the sandwich bar,
I love that.
You want to get over there and.
Wow.
Get yourself a mighty fine $5 sandwich that outweighs most babies.
Yeah, that's called thanking the third responders. That is so important, actually. I read an article, and I don't know where it's from because I don't quote where I hear things, but it's not made up.
When you say that, it makes it feel like it's totally made up.
Well, no, actually, it should give credence to the fact that it wasn't.
Totally didn't come from some homeless guy that I met on the street and gave a quarter to and then asked him for change.
That's like when you talk to somebody and they start the sentence by saying, hey, you know, I can't lie, but I didn't see the stop sign. Why are you telling me you can't lie? What are you setting me up for?
That's right up there with no offense, but.
Right, exactly.
Oh, so you're about to offend me. Oh, okay,
yeah, okay
cool.
There you go.
So now that I'm prepared.
Yeah. So they did a survey somewhere of some people.
They did they?
Some, they did.
Those people.
So it was a big survey. And 44% of those surveyed said that they are drinking more now than they did before the thing happened. And I'm thinking to myself, only 44%?
You bunch of lightweights.
Sounds like a bad answer on Card Sharks. It just, it's just not true.
So when he turns to you and you go, Jim, I got to say higher.
Exactly.
Show us the card, it's higher.
That's funny. And it also tells me your age that you actually knew what I was talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm constantly, I'm constantly finding myself explaining myself to millennials.
Well, I'm sure there are a number of channels, but there's one that shows a lot of like the old game shows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And actually, I came across it a couple weeks ago. It was Card Sharks. I'm like, oh my God, I remember this.
Yeah.
Not only is it fun to kind of go back and see, mm-hmm. you know, how we were in simpler times, but boy, the fashions.
Yes.
The things that we thought were okay, clothing and hair wise.
No.
We should be retroactively ashamed of ourselves.
We should, but who knew? If everybody's dressing like that, then that's normal.
Nobody should have lapels that are wider than their size.
I know.
But every guy had on a leisure suit.
I know.
With like lapels, you pretty much could have taken flight in some of these things.
I know. It was the worst. I remember watching Password. Alan Ludden would be dressed in a leisure suit with a shirt and tie. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's not a jacket, sir. That is not a suit jacket. It was wow.
But then you also get the guys, the celebrities, again, yes. you know, rich people who should have known better as well,
right.
who are wearing the number one, you get the leisure suit jacket on.
Yes.
With the ruffle front shirt underneath
yes.
it. Like the tuxedo ruffle front shirt.
No. It was weird stuff. And remember the safari jacket?
Oh yes.
Yeah. That was supposed to be big, like you came out of Africa and you just bagged a couple of babes. It's a very odd, every look was horrible. And then people were walking around dressed like surgeons in surgical garb.
The thing about the safari jacket is that nobody chose to pair it with a piss helmet, though. like you saw plenty of people wearing the safari jackets,
yes.
but nobody had the matching weird
yeah.
hat.
Yeah. You're right. They didn't go far enough with the obscurity of that, the whole idea.
I mean, it's also hard to make that hat work with sandals and black socks. So.
I know, but it did. And checks with stripes. I mean, anything went, and it all sucked. But and women with how much hairspray can you put in that wig? My God, that was
that's why we have no. That's why we have no ozone.
I'm surprised I ever had an orgasm for 20 years. So is everybody else, actually.
I've got no idea how those two things go together, but I'm going to let you have that one.
Because everybody looks so ugly. It's just, thank you for letting me have it, first of all.
Ugly people get laid too, Ron.
Oh, well, okay. Anyway, not as much, perhaps, but okay.
But still.
Whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. So I'm enjoying the Woodbridge, California thing, and...
But, that's an offshoot of the Robert Mondavi Vineyard.
Oh.
I don't want to tell you that it's their bargain brand, but okay.
No, I fully expect that would be the case because I am not, I admit, I mean, I can, I'm old enough to admit what I know and what I don't know, and I don't know that well.
But I'm also, I mean, if you know, as I go, no. as I go a wine shopping, like, you know, you look and it's like, oh, $17? No, that's too much.
Yeah,
that's too much for what I'm going to do with that.
But you know the difference between a good one and a bad one before you open the bottle.
No, you really, and you never do.
Yeah, you do. You know your wines.
We have this conversation every time. I know certain wines, but... Yeah. The price is not good versus bad. And the majority of stuff that when I go and buy, it's not like, oh, I like that vineyard, I like that vineyard.
Okay.
It's like, oh, I haven't tried this yet. I want to try that.
All right.
I'm going to go, like, I should say, it's not that I like to try different things.
Yes.
But I mean, if I find one like this delicious Lenore, if I find one that I really, really like,
right.
I'll mark it down. I mean, I think everybody should do that. Yeah. I mean, the rule with wine is drink what you like and like what you drink.
Oh, same with anything, I suppose.
Right. And just keep notes of the stuff that you enjoy. Write it down. You know what? Especially now, everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a camera on their phone.
Yes, they do.
If you find a wine that you like you're out at a restaurant or something, just take a picture of the label.
Why not?
You know, mark it down for later so that when you're hitting your local liquor store and you say, what was that wine that I enjoyed? I'll look on my phone.
Not bad.
Oh, there it is, next to a picture of my penis.
Beautiful Instagram post.
Right?
Yeah. Who needs a cork? Thank you.
Hey, well done, sir.
What's the oldest? Wine is graded. In other words, if you find a bottle of wine or champagne that's like 20 years old or something, that's supposed to be great as long as it hasn't turned. Am I correct?
It depends upon the wine. Depends upon the vintage. It depends upon, I mean, some of it ages very, very well. Some of it ages very, very badly. Some of it you're supposed to drink now. Like people, here's kind of a thing.
All right.
Everyone, it's so funny. Somebody brought a bottle of wine to my house one night, and they were like, oh, I wasn't sure if I should bring this because it has a screw top. And like I was going to go, get that heathen swill out of my home immediately.
Yeah, wow.
You dreadful people. Wow. No, it's that the wine industry figured out that most people aren't cellaring their wines. Most people aren't going out and looking, you know, like, oh, I'll buy a case of the 1979 Chateau Le Neuf, and I'm going to keep it forever. No, like you go out and you get wine because you want to drink it.
Right.
You're drinking it that night, and you're probably killing the bottle.
Right.
So it made no sense age-wise to cork a lot of these things. Okay. And also I think too, because there is a lot of, I don't want to say mystery around wine, like there's a perception around wine. Like, you know, like you think that because, I know what a Shiraz is and I know what a Cabernet Sauvignon is, therefore I am wise in the ways of wine. No, I just drink a lot.
Okay. You're in the 44%.
Putting screw tops on good wine
so
that you can drink it right now and enjoy it because it's ready to drink.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the other thing, too. Most wine, like, it's not, if you find a wine in a liquor store that's got a cork in it, it's not that they sent it to the liquor store thinking, don't sell this for the next 3 years while it ages. Like, they're like, this is ready to drink. It's all ready to drink right now. Okay. You want to stash some of it away? Okay. That's your business.
So it's not necessarily better because it's older. Because they actually put the dates on the bottles of wine, so I'm figuring that must mean something.
It really just, you know what it is for a lot of people. I mean, and if you bother to go this deeply into the wine lore, there are good years and there are bad years, and it's a question of how good was the harvest, how good was the weather, did it make good grapes?
I see.
Guess what? If you have shitty grapes, you get shitty wine. Ta-da!
Yeah.
So, again, for like most people, that doesn't matter. Like, I don't know the difference. If I have two bottles of Lenore, which I adore, I adore Lenore.
Right. Oh.
And I have this, you know, like 2018, and there's a 2016. If I taste them both, I'm not going to know what the difference is or why there's a difference in that. I might like one better than the other. Who knows?
Oh,
or they could taste completely. Like if I drank them blind, I probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Oh, I'd be so sorry if you were blind.
Right. It's probably my own fault when you get right down to it.
Well, I told you.
Walking around with a pool cue, swinging it around like, you know,
who
pretending
warned
I'm beating a hooker.
Hey, well, that's why they warned you about that.
Right?
I know.
So like for most people, the age doesn't matter. The only reason that it would matter to people like you and me is because if we drank one that we liked, maybe finding that same vintage later means we're going to enjoy that as as well. I've had a couple of wines that I try like a later one because I know that I liked it before, and suddenly I don't like it. And it could be a difference in the way it was stored. It could be a difference in the actual the vintage itself. Or it could be a difference in the way it was made.
Yeah.
A homeless guy could have rubbed it in his armpit when I wasn't looking. I don't know. Why I never hand homeless people my wine.
That's the rule. I went to a bar once, and the bartender... I went to a bar twice, and the bartender, whom I knew really well, because I guess I was a regular.
You should probably have some fiber.
That's what he said.
I beat you to it.
Thank you. You're quicker. Yeah, he said, Ron, have you ever tried, I looked at the bottle, this is Johnny Walker Blue, and I said, what the hell is blue? He said, that's very expensive. That's like, if I give you a shot of that, it's like 50, 60 bucks. I said, what, for a shot, 50, 60 bucks? He said, yeah, it's very aged alcohol. And I said, yeah, I'll try it if you're buying me a shot. I said, yeah, God, I'll do it. And he gives me the shot, and I take the shot, and I looked at him, and I said, I don't get it. I don't get it.
And yet, for some people, absolutely a difference. I know whiskey drinkers and bourbon drinkers who insist that the older it gets, the better. And I think that for a lot of them, like brown liquors, that is a thing where the older it gets, or the longer it was in the cask, the better it gets, the smoother it gets.
Would not be the case where you're saying, okay, he's buying me a $50 shot of whiskey. Psychologically, that's going to be incredible. I'm going to taste it, knowing that that's the label that's been put on this. Mm-hmm. That's extraordinary because I know it's worth $50.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing too, and that goes back to the perception of expensive wine being better wine, which is not the case,
right.
Or older wine being better wine, which is not necessarily the case. What it all comes down to is exactly what you experienced in trying the blue, is that if it doesn't hit you, it doesn't hit you. You know what I mean? If you don't see anything in it, then that was $50 down the toilet, right?
Yeah.
But for someone else who's like more of like or wants to pass themselves off as being more of like a connoisseur of scotches or whiskeys,
exactly.
You know, and they're going to sit there and go, "Oh, I taste more ash in this. Yes. I taste more." Yes, you can feel the barrel flavor. The barrel staves were Cleveland. You know,
that's correct.
There's a great book, the name of it escapes me. Damn it. This woman, a journalist, she decided to take a year off from work and study to be a sommelier. And, you know, to the kind of the person who, you know, they're the grand masters of wine. And, you know, they can taste one and go, "Oh, this is a 1974 Rothschild. It came from the left edge of the vineyard. It was bottled on a day that was stormy," you know. And she goes into it and she kind of demystifies the whole sommelier process. And there's a whole section of the book where she looks at all the times that it was proven that basically these people are full of shit. Like if you put a fancy label on a bottle of wine, you know, that looks legitimate, some of these people are going to pretend that they, you know, they know its provenance. Correct. They know, you know, that it's better, when basically they opened up a thing of Boone's Farm and poured it through a funnel.
Exactly.
It's a game, you know.
It is. It's a psychological. Had I not known the price of that, and someone just said, "I'll buy you a shot," I would not have taken the shot and said, "This is incredible stuff. What is this?" I know that wouldn't be the case. I'm cynical, so that's the approach I took. Like, this isn't going to be any different than anything else, and that's exactly the result, because that's the way I walked into it. So,
I mean, I like bourbons, and there are some that I taste that, you know, people say, "Oh, you got to try this." I'm like, "Oh God, like this is a paint thinner." I've had other ones that you drink it, and it's like, wow, like you get those flavor associations.
Certainly.
It's totally one of the things I like about wine.
Yeah, but that's a brand. It's a brand deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, and there are certainly, you know, I mean, there are different ways of making whiskeys. There are different ways of making scotches, and that's going to impart different flavors that are going to come through. But the other thing is, we're all going to interpret those flavors very differently.
True.
I think I mentioned this last time. There was a wine that I tried once. It was a combination of two grapes, Chenin Blanc and Viognier. Uh-huh. And I poured it, and I gave it a little, you know, gave a little swirl, because that actually does something. It actually kind of wakes up the what I call esters in the wine. And I smelled it, and it was the weirdest thing, because what my mind told me I was smelling, which clearly has nothing to do with the wine, was baseball card bubble gum.
Really?
If you remember that rock hard stick of bubble gum that came in every pack of baseball cards, every pack of Tops,
I remember.
There is a really distinct smell to that gum.
Yes.
And I smelled this wine, and my brain went, "Tops baseball card bubble gum," which again has nothing to do with the wine, but it's the way that we make these flavor associations.
Interesting.
You know?
Wow.
And I, you know, and then I drank it, and I'm like, "No, there is no bubble gum in this wine. Of course there isn't." But it's funny the way that our brain does that to us. So like when you have like a good bourbon, and you're like, "Oh, like I get like this like vanilla and butterscotch in here," which again, you know, has never been inside of this.
Right.
But we kind of reach out for those associations.
Sounds good though.
And it's amazing like how powerful like sense memory is.
Yeah, it really is. It's all we have to go by when it comes to that.
And the thing that always cracks me up about wine, again, with, you know, going back to how, you know, I mean, there is wine snobbery and there's just people who like drinking wine. Uh-huh. I love when people write things like, you know, that a wine has flavors of Riverstone and leather. Like, oh, what's wrong with that? But there is a great book called Somm, S-O-M-M, which looks at a bunch of these different people who are, like, putting their lives on hold to do the sommelier taste. And there is a guy who's in the book who puts rocks in his mouth. And, like, he sucks on these rocks to try to be able to ascertain the difference in the tastes of the minerals in the rocks so he can apply that somehow later to the wines he's trying.
Oh, my God.
And, like, if he's, like, at a place where there's, like, if he's at a vineyard, he will put a rock in his mouth from the vineyard.
Yes.
So that he understands the mineral composition around the vineyard. I'm like, dude, you're sucking a rock.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
And that rock is not going to show up in your wine. You're just going to tell us that it is so that you sound like you're super fancy wine dude.
Yeah, that's close to psychotic is what
that's
that is.
That's odd. Yeah, yeah, that's a little, well, and again, if you look into the whole world of sommeliers and what these people do and what they go through to try to get this designation, they're fucking nuts.
They are, but the common not you, but the common person who doesn't know anything about wine looks at the sommelier as being some kind of god, because we need to put experts, whether they are or not, for whatever reason, we need somebody to be up there, you know, above the clouds.
And that's part of the problem with wine is that, you know, we've decided that it has these, you know, mystic qualities that need to be explained
to us.
When what it comes down to is put it in the glass,
try it. Do you like it?
Did you? Yeah, exactly. Was it okay?
Yeah.
Did it not kill you? Have another one.
Yeah. I must admit, and you've probably done this too, that I think once in my life I actually refused a bottle of wine in a restaurant, and it was because it smelled like vinegar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, but otherwise I wouldn't have known. But it was like drinking vinegar. So I said no, and he did the thing, and he said yes, you're absolutely right. But I think he just said that anyway.
Yeah, I don't do that a lot. But actually, you're right. I think once I did, and it was funny because the waitress agreed with me.
Well, they're always going
to agree with you. But she like sniffed it, tasted it a little bit. It's like, oh yeah, that's corked. She was like, that's there's something wrong with
it
that.
It does happen. It happens a lot. Let me just toward the end of our conversation here, because a lot
Has
of people
it already been time.
That's yeah, actually,
holy cow. And this one was actually about drinking. We promise that this won't always be about drinking. But
well, it was the damn jingle.
if one gets me talking about wine,
I guess so.
Then I must speak in terms of if one gets me.
If you something that goes well with wine is hypnagoguepodcast.com.
Oh yes,
you've been doing it. You've been this for a while. How long has that been going?
I have been doing the Hypnagogue podcast since 2009,
wow.
And it's funny you should mention this, Ron. And perhaps this is why.
Yeah.
I am actually about to release my 300th episode.
Mm.
For those who aren't in the know, and that is everyone on the mother effing planet, except for maybe 500 people. This is a podcast of quiet music. Well, not always quiet. I shouldn't say that. It's a podcast of ambient electronic and contemporary instrumental music.
Uh-huh.
It started as an offshoot. I used to review this music. I did that for about 13 years.
Yep.
I got overwhelmed by the amount of music that I was being sent. Because so many of these artists, I mean, this is a very small niche, but when there's a small niche of artists and there is very few outlets for people willing to write about it, you get everything. And because I didn't really kind of specialize, I mean, if it was instrumental music, it was basically, again, new age or ambient music, space music, however you want to call it, meditation music, study music, and even a lot of experimental stuff. The great thing about doing this, I listened to it all, and I wrote about a very large majority of it. And the great thing about it is that it opened me up as a listener. It put me in touch with music that I wasn't aware was out there. And it made me a better listener overall. And it really kind of like broadened my own musical horizons, which has been great. And so about every 2 weeks, although lately, during our strange times in which we are living, I've been putting episodes out a little more frequently because I think we need a little respite. We need a place to hide. And music is the best place for us to hide in right now. I've been putting together these flows of music. They're all 90 minutes. They are available wherever you get your podcasts. Get ready for an edit because I'm going to cough.
No, I'm not taking it out.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, it wasn't loud enough.
So, yeah, so I've been doing this. I started the podcast then because I decided that it's one thing to write about this music, but it's another thing to just listen to it. And as much as I could try to convey about what a music made me think and feel and experience, to try to do that in words, I could do that, or I could give you a cut from the album in with a bunch of other stuff and let you decide, like, your ears are going to like that more. It comes back to the wine. Give it a try. Did you like it? Go find it.
Yeah.
So I've been doing this for 11 years. Ooh. And have a global audience of about 800 or 900 subscribers, which is nice.
Very cool.
For me.
Very cool.
Really, really good audience, people that I'm in communication with. I have a lot of artists who I'm one of the first people that they send their newest stuff to. I've got more music than I could ever possibly play on this show. My music library has grown to, I'm closing in on 20,000 songs.
Get out.
Yeah.
Holy crap. That's a lot.
On the podcast alone, as of the 300th episode, which comes out on Thursday, what's Thursday, March 7th? May 7th. Yeah. I will have played roughly 3,570 something songs.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah, it's a blast. I mean, it's an absolute blessing. The listeners dig it. The artists, they know me. They keep sending it. It gives them some exposure. It's a minimal exposure, but the fact of the matter is, they could be tossed into a Spotify playlist and, mixed in with a million other songs, or they could be highlighted in this 90-minute podcast where they're one of 11, 12 songs. Yeah. And people can really experience your music, and it's very eclectic.
Yep.
I play a lot of stuff in one episode. You'll get some jazz influences. You'll get spacey synthesizer stuff, acoustic, piano or guitar. It all depends upon where my mood takes me when I'm doing the show.
Very cool. We have a link on newenglandbroadcasting.com. I don't know where people are listening to this show on what platform, but go to newenglandbroadcasting.com and you'll see a link to that website, Hypnagogue, like synagogue, but not Hypnagogue.
I like to think like demagogue, but okay.
Well, my background. So it's hypnagoguepodcast.com, but there's a link on newenglandbroadcasting.com, and check it out. Because, in these weird times, that music kind of fits into mellow out a little bit and also stimulates you, too. So.
And the 300th episode, which is a great place to start, actually is an extended episode. It's about 2 hours long.
Yeah.
They're normally 90 minutes. I wanted to celebrate a little bit, so I tacked another half an hour on, and there are some of the best names in ambient and electronic music are included in this podcast.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Grab a listen to that. And we'll do this again very soon, perhaps next week. Who knows what the alcoholic beverage of choice may be? You never know.
I did go wine shopping today, so I am prepared.
So you're stocked up to do this. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
And next time, could you please save your drinking?
Yes.
Until it's time to record, so that I am not drinking alone. Again.
That's part of the song, and that's.
Right. Hey, play it going out too. Would you? Can you play it going out?
I always do, my friend.
Would you? Oh, you're the best.
Okay, all right. He's John Shanahan, and we'll be right back after this.
We're drinking with Mr. Shanahan, drinking on the phone, drinking with Mr. Shanahan, so he don't have to drink alone again.
Well, there you have it for today, ladies and gentlemen. You have just been wonderful. You really have. I don't know how you do it. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Thank you to Mr. Shanahan. Thank you to you. Thank you to the people that I've never talked to before in my whole life. Be back again tomorrow. Have yourselves a great day. I wish you peace.